Happy Tuesday, everyone. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger for January 21st, 2020. Today is National Hug Day. So sometime today, give someone a hug. You'll both feel a lot better. We are reading to you from our studio located at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. My name is Judy, and my partner at the microphone is Joan. We're glad to have you listening. We will start with a look at today's weather and headlines from the front page. The top headline today is Fort Dodge Man Charged with Murder Monday. A second headline, Living the Dream. And then $1.7 million proposed for parks, rec budget. And our last headline, City to Take Over Memorial Park Cemetery in July. Today's weather will have a high of 24 with the low of 14. Expect mostly sunny skies with a south wind of 7 to 16 miles per hour. And here is Joan to read about the murder that occurred yesterday.
Good morning. Fort Dodge man charged with murder Monday. Police find unresponsive woman in home after reported altercation. Russell charged in death. And this article is by Elijah Decius. And there's a picture of Mark Russell. And then another messenger photo by Elijah showing the Fort Dodge Police Department investigates the residents of 21 North 14th Street after making a first-degree murder arrest Monday morning. And it shows two police cars in front of that residence. A Fort Dodge man was arrested on a first-degree murder charge after Fort Dodge police say he killed a woman believed to be his girlfriend's mother Monday morning. Mark D. Russell, 28, was detained at 21 North 14th Street after police responded to a call regarding an altercation at approximately 9:14 a.m. The caller reporting the altercation to the Webster County Telecommunications Center said that a man and a woman were arguing, according to a press release from Fort Dodge Police Department. Officers found an unresponsive woman, 45, inside the home shortly after their arrival. There, they detained the defendant on the scene as they began resuscitation on the woman. The woman was pronounced dead after efforts by police and emergency medical treatment from the Fort Dodge Fire Department. The preliminary investigation into this incident suggests that an altercation broke out between the male and female, the police press release Monday said. At some point, the male subject grabbed an object from inside the residence, using it as a weapon, striking the female. Russell's initial appearance in magistrate court is scheduled for 9 a.m. today. Officials did not release the woman's name Monday evening. Anyone with information on the incident is encouraged to call the police department or submit tips anonymously via Crime Stoppers by calling 515-573-1444 or texting LEC followed by the tip to Crimes 274-637.
Our next story is called Living the Dream. Locals remember Martin Luther King Jr. And this article is written by Elijah Decius, and it has a picture that has a lady reading a reading of Martin Luther King's to a group of people who are eating breakfast. And it says, Julian Naylor does a reading in recognition of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., on his namesake holiday Monday at T.C. May's Family Diner. Locals Sherry and Charlene Washington started up the breakfast again a few years after the last Martin Luther King Jr. Day breakfast. And now for the article. More than 50 years after Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, at the peak of the civil rights movement, those in Fort Dodge, both young and old, haven't forgotten him. Despite the lapse in traditional breakfasts, each Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and no event scheduled at the library, as usual, some took action this year to remember that progress towards civil rights was not a one-and-done deal. Usually there's something every year, but there wasn't this year, said Sherry Washington, who is expected to become the president of the local NAACP chapter that is now working through the approval process. We couldn't let that happen. Sherry Washington, along with her mother, Charlene Washington, helped bring a group to T.C. May's family diner Monday morning to celebrate the dream of the holiday's namesake in true form. It was not lost on them that 56 years after King delivered his I Have a Dream speech, that's a small talk, both black and white, was able to casually gather for breakfast at the same tables in close quarters. It's something, Sherry Washington said, they don't take for granted with the simple passage of time. There they took turns giving readings about King's life, remembering how he forged one of the biggest movements of the 20th century, before singing, We Shall Overcome. There, King symbolically watched his dream as reality front and center from the confines of an old framed photo, provided by Charlene Washington, seated on the red vinyl of a diner chair. Then he didn't live to see white kids and black kids sitting together, Sherry Washington said. None of us would have been able to sit at this diner together over 50 years ago. The simple reading and song was their way, however small, of paying their respects to a legend that they could never thank in person. We are who we are because of him, Sherry Washington said. So many things have become diverse because of that dream. But as the second decade of another century is ushered in, far removed from the sit-ins at segregated lunch counters, she said their work was not yet done. We're making progress, but we have a ways to go, she said, telling the messenger that the next frontier of progress is in bringing respect back to humanity, even if the law forbids discrimination. She said that the evolution of communication through social media has, in part, erased the respect due in everyday life, allowing some to say things with a keyboard or phone that they would never say to a person's face. Bringing respect to another level is progress in the right direction, she said. Every year, if I can keep that dream alive, standing on his shoulders, I will.
City to take over Memorial Park Cemetery in July. Excuse me. Our next story is $1.7 million proposed for parks rec budget by Bill Shea. And this has a picture showing Lori Branderhorst. A $1,716,925 budget is proposed for the Fort Dodge Parks, Recreation, and Forestry Department for the fiscal year that begins July the 1st. But much of that money will come from the fees paid by people who play recreation sports, tee off at Lakeside Municipal Golf Course, or swim at the Rosedale Rapids Aquatic Center. The budget proposal envisions $1,148,275 in revenue. The budget is for the fiscal year that begins July the 1st. State law requires cities to have their budgets done by mid-March, so the City Council reviewed the Parks, Recreation, and Forestry Spending Blueprint on Monday. The proposal includes one new entry-level position as a result of the promotion of Ryan Mayall, the former Assistant Director of Parks, Recreation, and Forestry, to Assistant to the City Manager. Lori Branderhorst, the Department Director, said the new employee will have the title of Recreation Technician. She said the individual will be in charge of concessions, marketing, and special events. The budget also includes money to switch to a liquid chlorine system to disinfect water at the Aquatic Center. For decades, chlorine gas was used to disinfect the water. Branderhorst said liquid chlorine is safer. It's going to be safer for the community, she said. She said people using the Aquatic Center won't notice anything different because of the new chlorine system. The Parks, Recreation, and Forestry budget is divided into these categories. Lakeside Municipal Golf Course, $471,500. Harlan and Hazel Rogers Sports Complex, $370,350. Rosedale Rapids Aquatic Center, $336,700. Parks Maintenance, $221,700. Recreation General Sports Leagues, $141,450. Trails Maintenance, $125,500. Citizen Central, $106,250. Oakland Cemetery, $40,500. Memorial Park Cemetery, $32,000. Olson Park Splash Pad, $15,675.
And our last story from the front page, city to take over Memorial Park Cemetery in July. Site was abandoned by prior owner. And this story is written by Bill Shea. And it has a picture showing three men sitting on riding mowers. And it says, three Fort Dodge men sit on their riding lawnmowers at Fort Dodge Memorial Park Cemetery on May 29th, 2019. Members of the public stepped in to clear overgrown grass from the neglected cemetery in May of 2019. Pictured from left are Tony Van Every, John Williams, and Pat Van Every. And now for the article. Fort Dodge Memorial Park Cemetery, which was essentially abandoned by its owner last year, will become city property on July 1st. It's ours, so we're going to have to embrace it, Lori Brandehorst, the city's director of Parks, Recreation, and Forestry, told the city council Monday. Brandehorst's department will oversee the cemetery at 3242 Fifth Avenue South. The proposed 2020 to 2021 budget she presented to the council envisions spending $32,000 to maintain the site, with much of that money, $17,000, paying a company to mow the grass. Overgrown conditions, including 10-inch high grass obscuring headstones, were obvious in the days before Memorial Day 2019. Motivated by a challenge Bradley Edgerton of Fort Dodge issued on social media, dozens of volunteers showed up at the cemetery on Memorial Day weekend with their own mowers and trimmers to tackle the grass. It is not clear how many people pitched in, but Edgerton said he was shocked by the number of volunteers. While investigating how the cemetery fell into such an overgrown condition, City Manager David Fierke sent police officers to the home of Alan C. Dorothy, who was listed in the Iowa Secretary of State's records as the organizer of Fort Dodge Memorial Park, LLC, to see if he was all right. Fierke said Dorothy told the officers that he was out of business and no longer taking care of the cemetery. The Iowa Insurance Division, which regulates cemeteries, stepped in and went to court to place the cemetery in the legal status of receivership. During the receivership period, the state agency and the city government teamed up to take care of the cemetery. Under state law, cities are ultimately responsible for cemeteries. So Fort Dodge will become the owner of the site when the receivership ends on July 1st. Fierke said Monday that the city has received, quote, great support from the state during the receivership. According to Brandehorst, the state gave the city a $20,000 software program for cemetery management. It is not a pleasant situation, said Councilman Terry Menke. I think we responded well. I think we did a great job bringing it up to what it is today. Brandehorst said there are still available plots in the cemetery, although she wasn't sure how many there are. She said plots will be sold for $600 apiece. Each plot, she said, can hold one vault for a casket or two cremation urns. The proposed budget envisions $23,000 in revenue, and Brandehorst said the revenue will be able to minimize taxpayer burden. Councilman Nevin Conrad, who is an attorney, said one of his clients showed him a deed for a burial plot that described the site as a, quote, whites-only cemetery. We should definitely change that, he said. Brandehorst said no cemetery bylaws or other documents have found. It remains unknown if the whites-only rule was ever enforced.
No injuries reported after semi hits car. Fort Dodge firefighters look over the wreckage of a car that was struck by a semi-trailer traveling south Monday on U.S. Highway 169 at Avenue O in Fort Dodge. The driver of the eastbound car escaped any injuries. According to Fort Dodge Police Sergeant Paul Samuelson, A witness told police that the semi had traveled through a red light at the intersection before hitting the car. Fort Dodge Police, Webster County Sheriff's Department, and the Fort Dodge Fire Department responded to the accident. And this photo was by Hans Madsen, showing the firemen and other responders around the damaged car.
Okay, from our files, January 2005. Greg White, then the Pocahontas Economic Development Director, stands amid the downtown area in Pocahontas, which was in the beginning stages of being revitalized as part of an overall economic development program. And the picture simply shows Mr. White standing on one of the main roads. In the Messenger poll this week's question, do you favor ratifying the Equal Rights Amendment and adding it to the Constitution? And if you would like to answer that question, you go to www.messengernews.net. This date in history. Today is Tuesday, January 21st, the 21st day of 2020. There are 345 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On January 21st, 1861, Jefferson Davis of Mississippi and four other Southerners whose states had seceded from the Union resigned from the United States Senate. On this date in 2003, the Census Bureau announced that Hispanics had surpassed blacks as America's largest minority group. 10 years ago, a bitterly divided U.S. Supreme Court in Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission vastly increased the power of big business and labor unions to influence government decisions by freeing them to spend their millions directly to sway elections for president and Congress. 5 years ago, in an embarrassing setback, House Republicans abruptly decided to drop planned debate of a bill criminalizing virtually all late-term abortions after objections from GOP women and other lawmakers left them short of votes. Thought for today, I honestly think it is better to be a failure at something you love than to be a success at something you hate. And this quote is from George Burns, who was an American comedian who lived from 1896 to 1996.
Now we'll take a look at the community calendar to see what's going in and around the Fort Dodge area today. Daybreak Rotary Club, they met at 6:45 this morning at the Iowa Central Community College Cafeteria, which is room 101. The Railroad Retirees are meeting now. They started at 8 a.m. at Brownie's Cafe, located at 1712 Central Avenue. Senior Coffee, 9 a.m., Emerald Oaks Dining Hall in Emmitsburg. Kossuth County Historical Museum will be open from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. today. The Kossuth County Historical Museum, located in Algona. Blandon Memorial Art Museum, open from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. They're located at 920 3rd Avenue South, and admission is free. Webster County Genealogical Society, noon to 3 p.m. at the Fort Dodge Public Library, located at 424 Central Avenue. They will meet in room 134. A.A. Alano Club, noon and 7 p.m., the Serenity Group at 10 North 7th Street. Noon Kiwanis, noon at the Pizza Ranch. Humboldt Rotary Club, noon, Miller's Landing, located Highway 169 South in Humboldt. Fort Dodge Federated Garden Club, 1 p.m., Lion's Den, 721 Exposition Drive. Domestic Violence Support Group, 4 p.m., at Domestic Sexual Assault Outreach Center. Sac City Ambassadors will meet at 5 p.m. at Nanner's. El Anon, 5:30 p.m., 600 North Ridgely Street in Algona. Fort Dodge Duplicate Bridge Club, 6 p.m., instructional session and play of hands at Citizens Central. Fort Dodge Evening Lions Club, 6:30 p.m. at the Pizza Ranch. Parent Partners Mentoring Program, 6:30 p.m. at the Fort Dodge Public Library. American Legion Post Number 130 will meet at 6 p.m. at the VFW, located at 518 South 29th Street. Power, Prayer, and Discipleship Healing Room, 7 to 9 p.m., The Point Church, located at 1402 9th Avenue North. Coffee and cookies will be provided. Harmony Brigade Barbershop Chorus, 7 to 9:30 p.m., at the First Presbyterian Church Music Room, located at 1111 5th Avenue North, open to all men who love to sing, and the contact phone number is 570-3414. Bets Off / GA, 7 to 8 p.m., Community and Family Resources at 726 South 17th Street. N.A. Candlelight Stick Meeting, 7 to 8 p.m. at the Shalom Center, located at 501 North 12th Street. And then for today's announcements, Webster County Republican Caucus, February the 3rd at the Decker Auditorium. Doors open for registration at 5:30 p.m. Registration closes at 7 p.m. And that article is paid for by the Webster County GOP. Come join us for lunch. This is at Zakir's, located at 425 2nd Avenue South. Today, goulash. Wednesday, barbecue ham balls. Thursday, chicken Alfredo. And Friday, fried cod. And then we have a little article here in brief, the Pony Express Dance Saturday. Dayton Wranglers Pony Express Dance is 7:30 p.m. to midnight Saturday at the Best Western Starlight Village Inn and Suites, located at 1518 3rd Avenue Northwest. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Tyler Richton and the High Bank Boys will perform beginning at 7:30 p.m. There will be raffles and a live auction. Children are welcome, but ages 17 and under must be out of the dance bar area by 10 p.m. per state law. Tickets are $5 for adults and $3 for children ages 17 and under. All proceeds benefit Handicap Camp Sunnyside.
And now for the editorial page. Pork Congress is worth a visit. It's both educational and a great deal of fun. Each year, the Iowa Pork Producers Association holds a remarkable event, the Iowa Pork Congress. For more than four decades, it has been a much-anticipated opportunity for pork producers and assorted experts to come together to share views and information about one of the Hawkeye State's most important industries. The 2020 Iowa Pork Congress will take place Wednesday and Thursday at the Iowa Events Center in Des Moines. It has the distinction of being the nation's largest winter swine conference and trade show. The Pork Congress will feature an impressive roster of speakers and an impressive collection of exhibitors. The IPPA expects the event to host about 300 trade show booths. Typically, many of the exhibitors will be introducing new products or services at this show. That chance to see what is new and groundbreaking is a major reason for this gathering's popularity. Companies not only from Iowa, but also all across the nation will be on hand to showcase their products. There also will be a significant number of vendors from all around the globe. Education has always been a big part of the Iowa Pork Congress. The keynote address will be by Andy Curlis, the Executive Director of the North Carolina Pork Council. Additionally, there will be 10 educational seminars and training sessions on such matters as quality assurance and manure application. Social events and youth activities will once again be highlights of the gathering. Having a bit of fun is always part of the agenda. The seminars and presenters that are lined up will provide producers with practical information that can be put in place immediately, as well as outlooks and ideas that can help guide future decision-making for both pig farmers and pork stakeholders. IPPA President Trent Thiel, a pig farmer from Elma, said in a statement previewing the Congress, "Make plans now to attend what promises to be one of 2020's most important pork industry events. You won't be disappointed, and you'll learn a lot and have a great time." There is a letter to the editor written by Donna Gutnick of Fort Dodge. and it says Helgerson made big impact on Beacon. Today there was a wonderful article about the Beacon. I was disappointed that the name Rob Helgerson didn't appear. On March 13, 2013, I received a phone call from Rob asking to rent an apartment I had available. After showing him the apartment, he asked if he could move in immediately. He told me he was living at the Beacon and felt he was ready to move into the world again. Rod stated that from the beginning that he had Agent Orange and was going to receive a lot of money, over $200,000, when the lawsuit by Agent Orange recipients came through. He talked of what he would be doing with the money. He was going to give it away to all of the people in Fort Dodge who were in need. He wanted to do this personally and with the help of friends who knew people in need. He was writing a list and it kept getting longer. If the check didn't come before his passing, the money was to go to the Beacon because they had helped him so much. I was sorry to see him fail so rapidly and didn't get his first with to give personally. He would be very happy with the way the Beacon has used his money. I was in the new edition recently and was very impressed. Rod would be very pleased. And again, that was written from Donna Gutnick. On the picture in the editorial, it has a picture of Nancy Pelosi, and she's looking at a man with his hand in his pockets. And she says, throughout the impeachment, the process, I've been extremely prayerful. And the guy says, I believe the word is pronounced awful. And Pelosi holds up a handful of pins and she says, souvenir pin. And there's one more editorial, and it says, in defense of Iowa. And this is by Mark Shields. We have reached that time in every presidential nominating year when distinguished national opinion leaders beat up on Iowa and that admirable state's influential role in determining the two major parties' eventual presidential nominees and therefore the next president. The USA Today editorial board indicts Iowa for being one of the least ethnically diverse states in the country, and its status as the first in the nation presidential test every 4 years as un-American. While Paul Waldman writes in the Washington Post that the Iowa caucuses are a crime against democracy. It's time someone stood up for Iowa and Iowans. It's true that Iowa is neither very representative of the entire nation nor very average. Scholarly studies have ranked Iowa as tied for first place in percentage of the adult population who are high school graduates. Iowa's our fourth highest in access to health care. More representative Florida and Texas ranked 46th and 47th, respectively, in citizens' access to health care. We're first in broadband access and third highest in public libraries per capita. True, the Hawkeye State leads the nation in production of corn, soybeans, and pork, but Iowans are at the top of the nation in literacy, and the state has the U.S.'s 14th lowest murder rate. But Iowa remains a small rural state in the middle of the country. How representative can its voters be of the nation at large? The answer, amazingly so. In 1992, Democrat Bill Clinton won 43% of the national vote and the White House. In Iowa, Clinton won 43% of the vote. In 1996, winner Clinton carried 49% of the national vote and 50% of the Iowa vote. In 2000, Democrat Al Gore won the national vote by 0.5%, and Iowa by 0.3%. Republican George W. Bush won re-election in 2004 with 51% of the national vote and 50% in Iowa. Democrat Barack Obama in 2008 got 53% of the national vote and 54% of Iowans. In 2012, Obama was reelected nationally by a margin of 4% and in Iowa by 5%. And in 2016, the exception, Donald Trump, who lost a national vote by 2% to Hillary Clinton, carried Iowa by a solid 10%. Yes, Iowa's 2008 Democratic caucus was 93% white, and those mid-American Caucasians made history by giving legitimacy and momentum to a freshman senator from Illinois, Barack Obama. In Iowa, the African-American underdog won an upset victory over the heavily favored former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and was propelled to the top of the national polls. In fact, the rest of us owe Iowa our thanks. Iowans faithfully and earnestly fulfilled their civil responsibilities by showing up at a campaign town halls and listening and questioning the men and women who seek the White House. They take their responsibilities seriously. And then on a cold winter night, hundreds of thousands of Iowans leave their homes and go to the local church hall or firehouse or school gym and spend a couple of hours declaring and defending their presidential preference openly in front of neighbors and friends. In the caucus, firefighters join shoulder to shoulder with nurses, teachers, retirees, students, and small businesswomen in truly vibrant democracy. Here in Iowa, because Iowans give them a full and fair chance, the underfinanced underdog candidate has a real chance. It was in Iowa that Jimmy Carter broke through and where George H.W. Bush's upset win would lead to his being chosen vice president. Thank you, Iowa, for serving the nation so well. And here is Joan with the obituaries.
You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. The Messenger can be heard daily at 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. If you have any questions or comments about our program or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-6833. Now we turn to today's obituaries. Cheryl Brown. Cheryl Brown, age 80, of Fort Dodge, passed away on Saturday, January the 18th, 2020, at her home. Services will be 10 a.m. Friday, January the 24th, 2020, at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church in Fort Dodge. A visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, January the 23rd, 2020, at Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Burial will take place at North Lawn Cemetery. Cheryl was born on August the 28th, 1939, to Earl Richard and Erica Helgren Messerly in Fort Dodge. She graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High School in 1958. Cheryl Messerly was united in marriage to Thomas Brown on October the 31st, 1958, in Fort Dodge. Cheryl worked at Target for 26 years before retiring in 1998. She enjoyed crafts and refinishing old furniture in her free time. Cheryl was very passionate about her family and loved spending quality time with grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Cheryl is survived by her husband, Tom, sons Gary, wife Kim Brown, and Greg, wife Chrissy Brown, daughter Julie, husband Bill Ewing, grandchildren Jennifer, Alyssa, Maddie, husband Dan, Jaden, Logan, and Lucas, great-grandchildren Jayla, Brenly, Izzy, Tayton, Miles, and Levi, her sisters Gloria Mastrangelo and Julie, husband John Prather, and her brothers Dennis, wife Sill Messerly, and Rick Grimm, her brothers-in-law David, wife Ellen Brown, and Dr. Jean, wife Leora Brown. Cheryl was preceded in death by her parents, Earl and Erica, her sister, Sue, and her brothers-in-law, Dwayne and Gerald. Francis Eugene Patterson. Francis Eugene Patterson, age 83, of Fort Dodge, passed away on Monday, January the 20th, 2020, at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home. Services are pending at Loffesweiler Seavers Funeral Home is serving the family. Mary Louise Holmes Ellison of Clarion. Memorial services will be 11 a.m. Saturday at the United Church of Christ Congregational Church in Clarion. Visitation is 4 to 6 p.m. Friday at the Ewing Funeral Home. Ruby L. Danklaw. Ruby L. Danklaw, age 91 of Fort Dodge, died Sunday, January the 19th, 2020, at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home. Arrangements have been entrusted to Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Angela McLeod. Angela McLeod, age 45 of Fort Dodge, died on Monday, January the 20th, 2020 in Fort Dodge. Services are pending with Loffesweiler Seavers Funeral Home. Linda Jean Gilbranson of Eagle Grove. Linda Jean Gilbranson, the daughter of Robert E. and Lola Rengsdorf Gilbranson, was born on February the 22nd, 1950 in Fort Dodge, Iowa. She was raised and educated in Eagle Grove, graduating from Eagle Grove High School with the class of 1968. She then attended cosmetology school. Linda was a hairdresser for many years and co-owned Lynn Marr Hair Salon until her retirement. She then worked in Clarion and at Rotary Ann, helping with activities. Linda loved animals, having many cats and dogs over the years. She also enjoyed gardening, flowers, baking, and she spent many days playing Yahtzee, various card games, and working on word searches and crossword puzzles with Jim. Linda passed away on Friday, January the 17th, 2020, at Mercy One North Iowa in Mason City at the age of 69 years. She was preceded in death by her parents, grandparents, and numerous beloved animals. Linda is survived by her cousins Nancy Lockwood Seifert and her husband Mark and daughter Jennifer Smith, Steve Lockwood, Richard Lockwood, Michael Rengsdorf, Kathy Rengsdorf Parham, Peggy Rengsdorf Holt, and Debbie Norum Saliber. Special friend Jim Ralston and his family, Kelly and Dave Ponson, Chris and Amy Ralston, Amanda, Logan, Colton, Hayden, Johnny, Braden, and Adelie, her beloved dog, Chewy, and many other family and friends. Memorial services will be held on Wednesday, January the 22nd, 2020, at 2 p.m. at Faust Funeral Home in Eagle Grove, with visitation 1 hour prior to service time. Memorials may be directed to the family. Robert Campadilly of Humboldt. Robert Campadilly, age 80 of Humboldt, passed away Friday, January the 17th, 2020, at Trinity Regional Medical Center in Fort Dodge. A prayer service will be held at 4 p.m., with visitation from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, January the 21st, at Mason Linhart Funeral Home. Private family burial will be in the Washington Cemetery on Wednesday. The Mason Linhart Funeral Home in Humboldt is in charge of the arrangements, and the website is www.masonlinhart.com. Jim R. Hanch. Funeral will be Friday, January the 24th at 10:30 a.m. at Loffesweiler Funeral Home, with visitation on Thursday, 4 to 7 p.m. at Loffesweiler Funeral Home. Website www.loffesweilerfuneralhome.com. And then from Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services, located at 1615 North 15th Street, their phone number is 576-7128. Lou Ann Dutcher, 11 a.m. Tuesday at the Gunderson Chapel, visitation 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday at Gunderson's, and they are in service to Cheryl Brown. From Loffesweiler and Seavers Funeral Home, located at 307 South 12th Street in Fort Dodge, phone number 515-576-3156. Jim R. Hanch, age 70, funeral Friday, 10:30 a.m. at Loffesweiler Funeral Home, visitation Thursday, 4 to 7 p.m. at Loffesweiler Funeral Home. Rick J. Metz, age 64, private services at a later date. Angela McLeod, age 45, services are pending. Frances Patterson, age 83, services are pending.
And now for a look at the sports. The titles and lessons continue for 12-year-old Fort Dodge Matt Talent. And it says, Ross keeps national success in perspective. And this article is written by Eric Pratt. And it has a picture of Deshaun Ross, who is 12 years old, and it has him a picture. He's sitting on a fireplace at his home, and he's surrounded by all different kinds of wrestling trophies. And it looks like there are probably 24 trophies there. The championship trophies are everywhere, enough to potentially leave Fort Dodge's Dreshawn Ross satisfied for a lifetime, despite being only 12 years old. They come in different shapes and sizes from all over the country. 5 from the Tulsa Kickoff Classic, 4 from Reno Worlds, 5 from Tulsa Nationals, 6 from Winter Nationals, 3 from the Super 32 Challenge. Judging by his skill, athleticism, size, and sheer accomplishments, Ross, a chiseled 130-pound sixth grader at Fort Dodge Middle School, appears to be a wrestling prodigy, and that very well may be the case. Ross isn't a machine, though. He's not perfect, and those occasional reminders help him to succeed and improve in ways victory simply cannot. "I always need to work harder," said Ross, who captured another Tulsa Nationals crown this past weekend. "I know there are people out there who are going to be better than me. That's all the motivation I need. I want to be the best, and the losses make me hungrier." Ross doesn't deal with defeat much, but he tasted it this past fall at the Tulsa Kickoff Classic. In the 120-pound finals, Ross suffered a rare setback at the hands of California's Jacob Perez. The loss ended Ross's run of 4 consecutive coveted Trinity Awards, given annually to winners at the Kickoff Classic, Tulsa Nationals, and the Reno World Championships. He had secured gold in all three during the 2015-16, 16-17, 17-18, and 18-19 seasons. Ross rebounded in a big way for his return trip to Tulsa last weekend, reeling off 5 consecutive victories as a Seabolt Wrestling Academy representative to take the 32-man bracket at 130 pounds. He also grabbed gold at AAU Winter Nationals earlier this month, one of his 17 titles in the last calendar year alone. Wrestling isn't Ross's only passion. He enjoys playing football. "You have to be aggressive and physical, and I like that," he said, and is driven to succeed in the classroom as well. "I work hard and try to get as many A's as I can," said Ross, who added his favorite subjects are language arts and science. "I take the same approach and competitiveness to schools as I do with wrestling and football." Ross, the 218 National Wrestler of the Year and most outstanding wrestler at the Tulsa Kickoff and Reno Worlds during prior seasons, will be the USA Kids State Tournament in Cedar Rapids this weekend. It's going to be another busy stretch for the family. His sister Alexis is entered in the Girls State Meet in Waverly on Friday and Saturday as a high school senior high freshman. "All of my siblings are my biggest supporters," Ross said, referring to older brother Drevon, a multi-time Dodger State medalist, as well as Alexis, Alicia, and Demirian. "My mom, Amy, and my dad, Andre, a former Iowa Central wrestler, are always there for me, too." Ross knows his tournaments are serious business, but he all keeps it all in perspective, especially given there is so much more of his journey still to come. "I like to have fun," Ross said. "That's important. I'm always going to give it my all. But competing has to be more than just work. And my parents, siblings, and coaches at Seabolt have taught me it's not just about being elite on the mat or in the wrestling room. You have to take school seriously and be a good person, too." And this also has a period of Dreshawn, or a picture of Dreshawn standing there holding his 2020 Tulsa Nationals trophy.
Now looking at the St. Edmund Hoop Scoop. The tip, the Gaels will travel to Hampton to face Hampton Dumont CAL in a doubleheader on Tuesday. The girls' game will tip at 6:15 p.m. with the boys to follow. Girls probable for St. Edmund. Their record is 0-10 overall, 0-6 in the North Central Conference. Kelly Kirsten, a junior. Cambry McBride, a senior. Emma Neverman, a senior, Aubrey Bemrick, a junior, and Leah Neverman, a junior. Hampton Dumont, whose record is 11-1 and 6-1 In the North Central Conference, Casey Argers, a senior, Lauren Meter, a sophomore, Macy Argers, a senior, Courtney Miller, a senior, and Avery Hansen, a sophomore. At the last meeting, the Bulldogs beat the Gales 61-25 in the first meeting this season. Miller led the way with 16 points, while Hansen and Meter had 10 points each. McBride and Leah Neverman had 8 each for the Gales. Last time out, the Gales lost to Manson Northwest Webster 62-25. McBride and Leah Neverman led the Gales with 7 points each. About the Bulldogs. Hampton Dumont is ranked 11th in Class 3A and suffered its only loss of the season in their last outing, falling to number 4 Clear Lake 59-44. Hansen led the Bulldogs with 13 points, while Meter added 11. For the boys' probables, St. Edmund, whose record is 3-7 overall and 1-5 in North Central Conference, Connor Bakken, a senior, Jed Tracy, a senior, Kale Kalasha, a junior, Hayden Mayer, a sophomore, and Brock Stanick, a junior. For Hampton Dumont, whose record is 2-7 overall and 0-6 in the North Central Conference, Jay Spurgeon, a junior, Drew Hulenhop, a senior, Wyatt Sutter, a senior, Carson Miller, a senior, Jordan Severs, a junior. At the last meeting, the Gales defeated the Bulldogs 49-32. Jairus Duncan led St. Edmund with 15 points. Eulenhop paced the Bulldogs with 8 points. Last time out, the St. Edmund boys won their second straight contest, knocking off Manson Northwest Webster 52-32. Schaefer led the Gales with 12 points, while Bakken added 10. About the Bulldogs, Hampton Dumont lost to Osage 47-26 in their last outing. Severs led the Bulldogs with 8 points, while Eulenhop had 7. And this article was by Chris Johnson.
And now for the Hot Corner, Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. On this date, national. In 1953, Dizzy Dean and L. Simmons are elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. The baseball writers pass over Joe DiMaggio in his first year of eligibility. In 1958, Bob Pettit of St. Louis becomes the first player on a losing team to win the NBA All-Star MVP award. He finishes with 26 rebounds and 28 points in the East's 130-118 victory over the West. In 1969, Roy Campanella and Stan Musial are elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. In 1979, Terry Bradshaw throws 4 touchdown passes to lead the Pittsburgh Steelers to their third Super Bowl win, a 35-31 victory over the Dallas Cowboys. In 2007, Lovie Smith becomes the first black head coach to make it to the Super Bowl when the Chicago Bears win the NFC Championship. Tony Dungy joins him with his Indianapolis Colts take the AFC title. In 2009, New Jersey Institute of Technology ends its 51-game losing streak by defeating Bryant 61-51. New Jersey Institute of Technology had not won since it downed Longwood on February 19, 2007. 2012, Notre Dame upsets number 1 Syracuse 67-58 and hands the Orange their first loss after 20 straight victories. It's the 8th time Notre Dame has beaten a number 1 team. In 2017, Adam Hadwin shoots a 13-under-59 in the Career Builder Challenge for the 9th sub-60 round in PGA Tour history and the 2nd in 10 days. The Canadian reaches 13-under with a 7-foot birdie putt on the par 4 17th and makes a 3-footer from just off the green for par on the 18th at La Quinta Country Club. In 2018, Tom Brady rallies the New England Patriots from a 10-point fourth-quarter deficit to 24-20 victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars in the AFC Championship game. And in 2018, Nick Foles, who took over at quarterback last month when Carson Wentz blew out a knee, leads the Philadelphia Eagles to a 38-7 rout of the Minnesota Vikings in the NFC Championship game. For sports on TV today, for men's basketball, Butler at Villanova, 6 p.m. on CBSSN. Georgia at Kentucky, 6 p.m. on ESPN. Kansas State at Kansas, 6 p.m. on ESPN2. Wichita State at South Florida, 6 p.m. on ESPN EWS. Illinois at Purdue, 6 p.m. on ESPNU. Maryland at Northwestern, 6 p.m. on FS1. Florida at LSU, 6 p.m. on SECN. Wake Forest at Clemson, 7 p.m. on ACCN. Nebraska at Wisconsin, 8 p.m. on BTN. Virginia Commonwealth at St. Joe's at 8 p.m. on CBSSN. Miami at Duke, 8 p.m. on ESPN. Texas A&M at Missouri, 8 p.m. on ESPNU. St. John's at Marquette, 8 p.m. on FS1. Mississippi at Tennessee, 8 p.m. on SECN. Wyoming at San Diego State, 10 p.m. on CBSSN. And Air Force at Utah State, 10 p.m. ESPNU. If you like golf, at 1 p.m. on the golf station, you can see the Bahamas Great Abaca Classic. For NBA basketball, the LA Clippers at Dallas at 7:30 p.m. on NBA TV. For hockey fans, Pittsburgh at Philadelphia, 6:30 p.m. on NBCSN. And for soccer fans, Arsenal at Chelsea, 1:25 p.m. on NBCSN. For tennis, they have the Australian Open at 2 a.m. It'll be on ESPN2, 1 p.m. ESPN2. 6 p.m. on the Tennis Channel, and 8 p.m. on ESPN2. For men's basketball, Oklahoma State at Iowa State, 7 p.m. On the local calendar, girls basketball, Gales at Hampton Dumont at 6:15 p.m., followed by the boys game at 7:45 p.m. Verbatim, playing Cade one-on-one when we were way younger helped me grow. Because he used to be much bigger than me, so it toughened me up and made me learn post moves I still use today. And that's written by Angela Winkle, and it's on playing basketball with his brother Kate at Bishop Garrigan. And there is another story about the Winkle brothers that we won't have time to get to.
Now some hints from Heloise. First one's titled The Emergency Card. Dear Heloise, I made an emergency information card with information I hope I never need. Husband, cell phone, and car info. Make model, color, license number. Wife, cell phone, and car info. Make model, color, license number. Pets, names and descriptions, plus location if caged. Pet care, prearrangement with friend or kennel to come pick up pets in an emergency. Name, contact person, and phone number. Family doctor, name and phone number. Closest relative, name and phone number. Closest friend, name and phone number. Neighbor, name, address, and phone number. And that was submitted from Susan P. in New Braunfels, Texas. Heloise replied, here's a Heloise hug for you, Susan. Readers, hand out this card to a trusted neighbor and customize your list for the needs of your family. Next one entitled, Extra Help. Dear Heloise, for walkers with no seat, when sitting in a chair with no arms, for example, a restaurant, dining table, and so forth, I turn the walker around backward and push or roll it until the walker touches, surrounds the back of the chair. This gives me arms to grab hold of when need be. Plus, it gets the walker out of the way. This also is useful in a restroom stall. And that's from Julia P. in Albany, Texas. Next one, doesn't hurt to ask. Dear Heloise, I know I shouldn't carry a balance on my credit card. However, right now I do, and at a high interest rate. I called the bank and asked if they would lower my interest rate. They did. It was really nice of them to work with me. And that's from Ann in Pennsylvania. Heloise replies, great job being proactive to dig out from debt. Next one, hubby's off the hook. Dear Heloise, another hint for microfiber cloths. My husband occasionally leaves a tissue in his shirt or pants pocket. If I fail to take it out before washing, I end up with little pieces all over the entire load. By chance, I had a microfiber cloth in one such load. Much to my surprise, all the little pieces of the tissue had collected on the cloth. Wonderful time saver. From Pat P. via email. Throw it out. Dear Heloise, I, like most women, am an avid user of cosmetics. I write the date I purchased them with a marker. This allows me to judge when they should be thrown out or replaced. Lipsticks can become rancid. It would be great if expiration dates were put on cosmetics. And that's from Mary in the Villages, Florida.
And now there's time to read a Dear Annie. It says, people who complain about giving gifts are not getting one in return. Should remember an old saying, if you are giving something and expecting something in return, then it is not giving, it is a business. And that's from good old saying. May our readers find the pleasure in giving to others without expecting something in return. That good feeling, in and of itself, is a gift. A writer asked about giving a gift to someone who has everything. We think of gift giving as expensive and impressive. It's not. The best gift can be some small trinket that brings back a happy memory that you share with a person or persons. We spent one Christmas on a small foreign island. The only thing open on Christmas Eve was a small 7-Eleven store. We made the spending limit $5. It's hard to find anything for that amount, even in a 7-Eleven. One gift was a small set of Christmas tree lights. Back at the hotel, my wife broke off a small branch and stuffed it in a coffee can. We lit it up, and we looked just like the Christmas tree in the Peanuts comic strip. We had a great Christmas and many laughs over the years about our little tree. My greatest gift was the last photo of my wife. Although she was extremely sick, and she sat up and smiled, and now sits on my desk, and I look at it every day and smile. It's a great way to start a day. And dear Anne said, I'm sorry about the loss of your wife. And here is Joan for the closing.
Now to look at our weather. Today, mostly sunny, high around 24, low around 14. The winds will be south at 7 to 19. Tomorrow, a wintry mix, high around 36, low around 32. Thursday, another wintry mix, high around 36, low around 26. On Friday, chance of snow, high around 34, low around 22. Saturday, mostly cloudy, high around 31. Low around 18. Sunday, mostly sunny, high around 23, low around 25. And then on Monday, mostly cloudy, high around 34, low around 26. At least everything is above zero finally. Temperatures, yesterday's high was 7, yesterday's low was minus 7. That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. We thank the folks at Friendship Haven for giving Iris a home in Fort Dodge for so many years. And we thank you for listening with Iris.